Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoog, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday morning in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station. Right here in Kansas City, interesting and eventful things to talk to you about this week. First of all, we're going to, this may well be the last we'll have to find out, but this may well be the last concert ever for the Fine Arts Chorale. This is their final season, I know that. I don't know if they have anything coming up after. We'll find out. It is their spring concert. It is entitled Inner Light, sets from text of leaders who have inspired others, it sounds like. And with us to talk to us about it is Dr. Terry Teal, the artistic director and conductor for the Fine Arts Chorale. She's been their the music director and conductor since 1992. She has an undergraduate degree in voice performance, master's in musicology, and a doctorate in conducting. She is a full-time professor at Johnson County Community College and currently sings in Te Deum, a choral group featuring sacred music and the like. So welcome back to the show. You were here not all that long ago. It's Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day, that's right. And I appreciate you having me back again, Michael. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Thank you for coming back, of course. The Fine Arts Chorale has been around for, I know this is their last season now, but how long have they been around?
You know, I don't know the exact year, but many, many years ago, they started as an outgrowth of the auditorium chorale there in Independence, because they got together to do just the Messiah once a year and decided they wanted to do, some of the singers wanted to present other concerts. And so they had several leaders. Right before me, Arnold Epley was the director of the group, and I became involved with the group when he was the director, and at some point we became co-directors, and then when he went off to do the symphony chorus, I took over the group as their director. And gosh, I didn't realize it was that long ago. I'm feeling a little older than I was before I came.
1992.
Yeah, thank you for repeating that.
Just to be historically accurate for the audience.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, the fight, the Messiah. I saw that periodically. I've seen that over the years.
Yes, they still do it, and it's a really wonderful tradition there, and lots of singers who've done that ever since it began. But really, the group started as an outgrowth of that, and it started in Independence, and then at some point, under my leadership, we moved downtown to St. Mary's for a while, and then we've had different homes over the years, but more centrally located, because we had singers from all over the metropolitan area. We even have a singer who comes as far as Topeka to sing with us every week, and so he gets the prize for driving the longest distance for rehearsal each week. But
see, when I think of the Fine Arts Chorale, I think primarily of a woman's chorale, but not necessarily the case if you have a man.
No, it's always been an SATB group. Yeah, it's always has been. Now, there is a Kansas City women's chorale, and they do concerts through the year. And, of course, there's the Heartland Men's Chorus, and they are very well known and do really fun performances, oftentimes at the Folly. But Fine Arts Chorale has been a group that's been really committed to doing really fine choral literature, but a variety of choral literature, and to have a little bit of a niche at doing things that maybe aren't done by other groups so much. Several of the pieces we've done over the years have been like that. And, for example, when I was finishing my doctoral degree, we presented one of the Josquin masses that's hardly ever heard in performance, and that was my doctoral thesis, an edition of that, and we performed it, and it was a real highlight, I think, over the past years of the group. And but pretty serious choral literature. We've always commissioned pieces too, new pieces. So that's sort of how we fit into the Kansas City choral scene.
Sure, it's been around for some time, and all my joking aside, is this the last concert?
It really is the last concert. This is the last season for the group. I decided at the beginning of the season to resign, and then so the board, effective at the end of this season, and the board had to decide, you know, what direction they were going to move, and they did some research and gave a lot of serious thought to that, and I appreciate that, because it was, you know, a difficult thing to deal with, and I think they've done a really fine job. So Fine Arts Chorale, as we know it, will kind of not be any longer. But I'm sure that there are people who want to sing, and, you know, they may find other groups to sing in, or they may band together with another leader and sort of reinvent themselves. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but that's a strong possibility, it looks like, at this point.
Yeah. Sure. Now, this being then the final concert, it's your spring concert. I guess you did several concerts every year. For instance, the last time you were on, it was the Valentine's Day concert.
Usually four a year. We do usually four. We do a public service one in the last two or three years at the library there, the Kansas City Library down by the plaza. That's been really, really fun. And it's really fun to have, you know, that theater down there full of kids. And we've done some fun Halloween programs there. And then this last time we did some music to go along with some of the top Caldecott winners, because this was the one of the anniversaries of the Caldecott Award. And that was quite a fun one. And then we've always done our holiday concert. And then our Valentine's concert became a signature concert. And in the last few years, we've done it here in Westport at Californo's. And so the music and the wine and the champagne toast and the Andre's chocolates and dinner, and then, of course, wonderful love songs and things like that. It's been quite a wonderful evening and probably our signature concert. This last concert usually is of a little more serious nature, and this one is no different from that. And it always features really strong choral pieces, and that's true of this one, too.
Yeah, it's called Inner Light. And as I understand it from my readings, sets from text and of leaders who have inspired others.
Yes, that's a great way to talk about it. It's evolved a little bit. You know, I plan these seasons out more than a year in advance sometimes. And all along I had planned for this concert to be of that ilk and around that subject matter. From the very beginning, I had planned to have some text, music on text by Martin Luther King, Langston Hughes, and Nelson Mandela, if I could find them. And I wasn't able to find them, but the Fine Arts Chorale commissioned some pieces to be set on text by Nelson Mandela. And then that was my plan all along. And then with his passing in this past year, it made the concert seem even more timely. And I went a little bit more in the direction of dedicated a little bit more of the portion of the concert to the civil rights movement here in America and apartheid there in South Africa. And this one of the centerpieces of the program is a three-movement piece, and the first two use quotes by Nelson Mandela. Mm-hmm. Can I read a little bit
of them? Sure. Just to clarify, is it the words the choir will be singing, the words of the gentleman?
Yes. There's so many quotes out there, and I went through, and then I sent them to the person we commissioned the pieces from, Jeff Wilkin, who's quite a talented person here locally, from Lawrence, actually. And I said, these are my favorites. But, of course, you know, use the ones that inspire you. But Jeff is so flexible. He took quotes that all the ones he picked were ones that he picked the ones that he liked that I also liked. And so we have this three-movement piece called That Promised Land. And the first one's called Let Freedom Reign. And he even works some of that South African choral aesthetic into this piece with these big block chords and wonderfully blended harmonies. And so the first one goes, I dream of an Africa which is at peace with itself. The sun never set on so glorious a human achievement. Let freedom reign. For to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. It is music and dancing that make me most at peace. For to be free in a world that enhances the freedom of others, let freedom reign. That's the first text for the first movement. And it keeps having the interjection of the big block chords in the South African style of Let Freedom Reign. But and the part that talks about music and dancing bringing peace is very lyric and dancing in the rhythm. And he just said it really, really beautifully. So that's the first movement of that one.
So that sounds like quite an endeavor. So someone took the words. Did you give them any hint of the kind of music you wanted, or did you?
Well, I did say to him. Yeah. I said, if you could work aspects of that South African choral style. I mean, some of your listeners may know the work of groups like Ladysmith Black Mambazo, and they're just wonderfully blended, and that the choral tradition there is so wonderful, and it has elements. It mixes Western culture, but with elements of the African cultures, and wonderfully, wonderful chorally. And he did that. He did that. And I also said if you could end with, if you could either use a South African freedom song or you could end with a spiritual that's appropriate. And he chose to end with a spiritual that's appropriate. The third movement is a fabulous setting of Deep River. I want to cross over into Jordan. So the idea after these Nelson Mandela quotes that talk about working for freedom and working towards that, then ending with that, I see the promised land. I want to cross over into the promised land, the Deep River.
Mm-hmm.
And because he chose that instead of the South African freedom songs, we are doing a set of South African freedom songs, which I think will be really great to set up this piece that he's written. And can I read you a little bit of the second movement?
Of course. Go ahead.
We must use time wisely. Again, this is a Nelson Mandela quote. We must use time wisely and forever realize that the time is always ripe to do right. We must use time wisely. And it goes on with other things from there, but that's the central gist of the middle movement of this piece. And again, beautifully set the way he's done it. And I'm really excited about presenting this new work to the community, and especially in this context of these leaders like Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela. I remember when I heard that he had passed, and I pulled over and wept because I think he has been such an inspiration to the world. And so I'm really excited about this. I don't know that there are other pieces that use quotes by him. So I think, you know, I'm proud if we're starting that.
Well, you may be the only one
yes.
so far. Yeah.
Yes.
It gives you the ideas to come up with your I know it's emotional based and it's historically based at the same time.
You know, I've learned over the years, I want to do good choral literature, but I've also learned over the years that I sort of have to follow what interests me,
mm-hmm.
both in terms of literature that interests me, but also in terms of themes. And I think some of my best programs over the past few years have been programs that I designed around themes that were inspirational to me in my personal life. I'm sort of at a place in my life where I'm looking to the future and what do I really want to do with the rest of my life and what really matters to me. And and where I'm very conscious of service to others, and those were the things that first inspired this concert. And then with Nelson Mandela's passing, it just gave me a place to really focus it and hone in on this particular program. But I think one of the best programs that I ever presented with Fine Arts Chorale was one, you know, we think about dark and light and dark being bad and light being mm-hmm. good and enlightenment. But I had been going through a very difficult personal period, and I did a whole concert based on the idea of dark being a good thing. And dark being, and use some poems by Wendell Berry. And one of them, for example, I put the seed in the ground and wait for darkness to do its work. And all the music and text were of that ilk. And it was one of the best concerts, I think, in terms of the subject matter now that we ever presented. And so I think it's where I am in my life and what inspires me and what seems to be inspiring people in the world, and to try to find something really interesting musically to do around those themes has been something that I think has served fine arts well and our patrons well. And I've been grateful for that because I feel like it's a little selfish.
Have you done much composing yourself?
No.
No?
It's a real struggle for me to compose or arrange. I have done a little bit of it, and a couple pieces I'm kind of at least not ashamed of. I do feel like I have worked with a couple of other people to come up with some commissions in fine arts. We did one with Ian Coleman called A Mass for Our Time, and instead of setting the traditional Kyrie, Ordin, and Gloria, and Credo, and all the traditional movements of the ordinary of the Mass, we came up with a Kyrie, but it was a modern-day poem, and we infused, and it was basically asking forgiveness, but doing it in a non-religious way, and a Gloria, the Gerard Manley Hopkins poem about all the beautiful things in the earth. That's what it was about, you know. And we said each movement of the Mass, we call them Kyrie, but we would put the new title, and using Native American text and other poets. And that was a piece I'm really proud of in Fine Arts Chorale, too. And this piece with Jeff, you know, he took so many of the ideas that I gave him and just ran with them. And so I feel like I've helped inspire some compositions and things like that. But I work with people who can give take my vision and make it into something concrete. And I feel really, really lucky in that way. I'm really grateful to people like Ian Coleman and Jeff Wilkin for having done that over the years. That's been a great pleasure and collaboration for me.
Yeah, we're speaking with Dr. Terry Teal. She is the artistic director and conductor of the Fine Arts Chorale. Their final concert is coming up. Their spring concert, it's entitled Inner Light, will be done, there'll be two concerts of the same program, April the 27th at the First United Methodist Church in Lawrence. So those of you in Lawrence, you don't have to drive as far for this one. And on May the 3rd at the Southminster Presbyterian Church at 63rd and Row that would be Prairie Village, probably.
Yes, it is.
The number to call for more information is the Central Ticket Office, 816-235-6222, or online at Fine Arts Chorale. Put an E on that, Chorale, Fine Arts Chorale, KC.org. We're speaking with Dr. Teal. We've talked about the Nelson Mandela part of the concert, but there are other parts to it as well.
Yes, there are. One of the other parts is we're taking a piece that was written not too long ago by Greg Bartholomew. And when Kofi Annan won the 2001 Nobel Peace Prize, he made a speech that's gotten quite a lot of play and been used quite a bit in response to winning the Nobel Peace Prize. And it was so Greg Bartholomew took portions of that speech and set them to music. And A Girl Born in Afghanistan, a lot of people will recognize some of that. Today in Afghanistan, a girl will be born. Her mother will hold her and feed her, comfort and care for her, just as any mother would anywhere in the world. In these basic acts of human nature, humanity knows no divisions. We must focus on improving the conditions of men and women. We must begin with that young Afghan girl. And it goes on to talk about how in this new century we have new understandings and we must treat every person as a person of worth because we don't know the potential of what they might bring to our world. And we honor everyone and we honor ourselves when we treat each person as an important part of the human race. And I find that to be very inspiring. This girl born in Afghanistan today is just one test of our humanity, he says. But it's the only test that matters. How do we treat each one of those people that we come in contact with? Are these children born into the world? And so we're doing that piece. And then we're doing a set of pieces that talk about service in the world and that are on some really beautiful text. One's from an old Gaelic rune. It's called Of Hospitality. One is from Mother Teresa, Fruits of the Selfless Heart. And another one comes from the 13th century from Hadewich of Antwerp called A Beautiful Thing. Make our service of love a beautiful thing. And so at the end of the concert, we're going to this idea of there are these people that come into the world who change the world and who make the world a better place and who make the world more fair for more people. So what can we do? What can we as individuals do? I'll never be a Nelson Mandela. I'll never be a great person like that. But there are things that we can do in the world with the people that we do come in contact with that might change the world and that might make a difference. And so the end of the concert, I think in a very good way, not a heavy way, but a good way, turns to this idea that, yes, I can make a difference. And so we end the concert with the spiritual, This Little Light of Mine, I'm going to Let It Shine, beautiful setting of that. So I think it's going to be an inspirational concert. The music is very fine, and or at least most of it, and the texts are wonderful, and I think they're going to be sung well. We have one more rehearsal, so I'll know more after that.
Yeah, getting everyone whipped into shape, that's a challenge for a conductor, I suppose.
Yes, it is, especially it's been a hard winter, and we've had a lot of illness, and there have been more absence than normal, and I'm a little concerned about it. You know, I'm always concerned about it. But on the other hand, there are things I know they're going to sing absolutely gorgeously. So if I can just get those last couple things up to the, you know, that, I really think it's going to be a really wonderful concert. And both times. And, of course, we get one extra rehearsal in between the first concert and the last one. So I'm quite excited about it. Yes.
Yeah, there's almost a week between the two. The one in Lawrence at the First United Methodist Church is on April the 27th. People can just go to that one?
Yes, they can just go to that one. That one is the congregation there's making it open to the community. And yeah, so it's Sunday afternoon at 3:30, and it gives people time to get a bite if they go to church or people of faith and then come to the concert, or for other people to get up and enjoy their morning and then maybe come on in and hear it. And then, you know, I measure time in rehearsal, so then I get one more rehearsal. And then we repeat that concert on Saturday evening here in town at Southminster Presbyterian at 63rd and Row.
Are you going to follow the usual theatrical director's way of doing things, writing notes even after the first performance?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Some of my choristers love that, and some of them don't. But, yes, I will.
So you didn't quite hold that note quite long enough. Follow my direction, and the arms will come down when you cut it off.
Yes. I try to tell them at least every once in a while what they're doing well, too. But, yes, the notes tend to be, what are the things we can still fix?
First United is in what part of Lawrence? Just to
it's right downtown. It's not far from Massachusetts Street.
Okay.
If people who are familiar with Lawrence, right downtown, it's actually at 10th and Vermont.
Okay.
So that'll be a way to find it there. I don't have the exact address, but 10th and Vermont Street in Lawrence.
Now, one thing I didn't get down was the time. So on April 27th at the First United Methodist in Lawrence, at about what time?
3:30 in the afternoon.
Performance mm-hmm. on Sunday. Then on May 3rd at the Southminster Presbyterian Church, 63rd in Row, is that also an afternoon or an evening?
That's an evening concert at 7:30 p.m. on that Saturday. And yes, Southminster's been a strong supporter of Fine Arts Chorale through the years, and so we're doing our final concert there. And it's a lovely building with a lovely acoustic. So people enjoy it. In Lawrence, the Methodist Church, you know, is one of the main churches there, and with one of the finest music programs in the city. And so that, you know, they have a long tradition there of good music. And so it's fun to do concerts in both of those spaces because the people from those churches, plus our regular patrons, and then people who might walk in off the street, enjoy them. I think they'll enjoy them.
Both the Methodist and the Presbyterians are known for their singing.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that makes you probably want to go there all the more.
It's so nice to go somewhere where people really do appreciate, you know, the music director there at the Methodist Church, Sarah. She's absolutely wonderful. And then Jeff Wilkin, the person that we commissioned this piece from, he's the music director there at the Southminster Church. And so he... you know, of course, he's excited about this because it'll premiere this new piece that he's done.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So I think, and there's also, I would imagine, a tad of nervousness premiering a new work. Never know how, you think you know how it's going to turn out, but you never can be 100% sure.
Yeah, but, you know, it's fun for me because I know people will find this hard to believe, but I'm fairly strongly opinionated.
Really?
So,
you'll never have guessed.
Yeah, so, you know, it's really fun for me to commission a piece and have strong ideas about it and see them come to fruition, but then I also get to shape them. And usually Jeff is really happy. He's even told me before, you see things that I didn't even see in my own music. And so usually it's a happy thing and we're on the same page. But I like being the first interpreter of a piece. I do. And I think I have things to bring to that. Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, you have confidence.
Yes, about that I do.
About that you do. Of course. Online, more information can be had at fineartschorale.kc.org. And the number to call for the performance on May 3rd is the central ticket office number, which is 816-235-6222. We're speaking with Dr. Terry Teal. Well, I suppose you end this with mixed feelings. You'll go on and do other things, of course.
I do end it with mixed feelings. You know, sometimes you just get to a point in your own life where you want to move in a different direction or you want to do something different. And I've been moving towards that maybe for 2 or 3 years now. But on the other hand, I have absolutely loved doing fine arts over the past years, and it's been one of my most professional outlets. And, you know, I'm really proud that the group is not made up of professional singers, but we get reviewed regularly. We get good reviews. They do really well. These are committed singers. These are people who want to sing literature of quality. And the people that have been in the group over the years have been wonderful to work with. The group's been wonderful to work with. The boards have worked so hard in non-paid positions to help make a vision that I've tried to put forth and that they have also collaborated in and make that a reality and earn money to do the things that we've done. And it's been hard in the last 2 or 3 years
with the
economy. And I am so grateful to them, and I have loved doing this, and I have gotten to do so much music. Of all the way from King David by Onager with a long, long time ago to conduct that piece with New Ear even playing. And I've gotten to do so many great things, these collaborations with composers and almost every major choral work out there, except for things that are just too big and with orchestra, you know. And I feel really blessed in that, and it's hard to walk away from that, and it's hard to walk away from the commitment that I've seen in the singers and on the board. It's just something that I had to decide to do finally, and so I have mixed feelings. I am really anxious to figure out the rest of my life and what's coming up, and I'm working on that, and I'm excited about it, but I am very sad about the end of what has been an absolutely wonderful period in my life.
Now, I'm sure whatever you do decide to do, I'm sure you'll be very successful at it as well.
Thanks. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you very much for being with us. I've only had you on a few times. So.
Oh, well, we so appreciate it. Oh. We so appreciate it. And I've really enjoyed it.
Okay.
You know, most interviews that I do, they're very short. And
oh, very
you
short.
Have given me such a luxury by giving me the opportunity to talk about these texts I love and the music I love and the process, and which I think can, you know, could be interesting and informative for your listeners, too. But it's a real treat for me, and I really appreciate it very much.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being here. Let's go over the vitals once again. April the 27th at the First United Methodist Church in Lawrence, Kansas. That will be essentially a just walk up and go in concert. And then the final performance on May the 3rd at the Southminster Presbyterian Church at 63rd and Row. The number to call for more information, this would be the central ticket office number, is 816-235-6222. Or all the information you would like to read about the Fine Arts Chorale, kc.org online. Emails and websites have been the savior of so many arts organizations.
They are, and you can get a link to the ticket office from our website, and you can find out information about the concert, or you can email and ask for information there, too, yes.
Yeah, so the mailing list and the expense thereof were just the death knell of many arts organizations. I know it costs so much just to do one mailing.
It does.
And now they can do things online.
It does. It's been a help in that way. Yes.
It really has. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Terry Teal, Artistic Director and Conductor of the Fine Arts Chorale. The final performances of the Fine Arts Chorale, it's called Inner Light, will be happening on April the 27th and May the 3rd. So thank you very much for being with us. We're going to take a break. Then when we return, we're going to talk about the opera. It's always fun to talk about the opera with one of my favorite guests. And we will reveal, well, Robert Gibby Brand. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Johnny Depp's commanding screen presence has made a number of mediocre movies seem a lot better than they are. Does his charisma transcend the material in the new sci-fi thriller Transcendence? In this case, the answer is no. The intriguing premise involves what could happen if an individual's intelligence could be uploaded into a computer and then given access to all of the information on the internet. Could we trust anyone with this godlike power? The ideas proposed are a lot more interesting than the script, which is riddled with plot holes. Acclaimed cinematographer Wally Pfister, who's worked extensively with director Christopher Nolan, makes his directorial debut with Transcendence, and he shows some flashes of inspiration. But on the whole, the execution leaves much to be desired. The same ideas were explored in movies like Colossus, The Forbin Project, and Demon Seed back in the 1970s, and the great computer-generated imagery on display in Transcendence fails to improve upon them. Greg Kinnear and a strong cast give fine performances in the faith-based movie Heaven is for Real, adapted from the 2010 nonfiction bestseller. Kinnear plays a Nebraska minister whose four-year-old son has visions of the hereafter while on the operating table, instigating a lot of soul-searching and conflict for the reverend and his flock. While gentle, sincere, and well-intentioned, Heaven is for Real is very slow-moving and lightweight. It will appeal mainly to the faithful and few others. Also opening this week, Damon Wayans is back in the horror spoof sequel, A Haunted House 2. Disney's Bears is a family-friendly nature documentary. Jude Law plays a foul-mouthed safecracker who tries to change after a near-death experience in the comic drama Dom Hemingway. And Scarlett Johansson is a homicidal alien in the avant-garde erotic sci-fi fantasy Under the Skin. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM.
Freeze Frame!
Tune in this Wednesday at noon for the All Souls Forum to hear Professor Robert W. McChesney talk about how the money is destroying the American electoral system. We're also going to hear how capitalism is turning the Internet against democracy. Potent subjects and certainly very topical. Join us Wednesday, noon, right here on KKFI for the All Souls Forum.
Wednesday night is Arts Night on KKFI. At 6 p.m., it's Art Speak Radio, followed by the award-winning From Arc to Microchip at 6:30. Then it's live radio theater on L.A. Theater Works from 7 to 9 p.m., followed by chamber music with Dr. Mike. Get your arts on Wednesday night on KKFI.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. I said earlier, one of my favorite guests, and to be one of my favorite guests, you have to be interesting and well-informed. And, well, this man sure is. Robert Gibby Brand is with us. He actually sings the role of Ivan.
Die Fledermaus.
Thank you. Die Fledermaus by Johann Strauss. And that is being presented by the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. Performances begin, by the way, Saturday, April 26th. Continue the next week, Wednesday the 30th. Then we crack into May, May 2nd on Friday, and May 4th on Sunday at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. And it's always great to have Robert Gibby Brand with us. He knows so much about, you must do research about the background of everything you do.
But this one's easy because I've loved Die Fledermaus since I was in college, which was a good many years ago now. And when I lived in Vienna for 3.5 years, there was no getting away from Die Fledermaus, and I saw some fantastic performances there. And so it's sort of in my bones. I just adore this piece. And you gave me credit for something more than I deserve. You said I was singing the role of Ivan. Actually, there are two speaking roles in this piece, and one is Ivan, who is Orlovsky's servant, Russian. And in the third act, there is the great virtuoso comic role of Frosch, which in our production is going to be played by Gary Neil Johnson. And he has done this role twice before for the Lyric Opera, so it's a great delight to have him back doing this role again. And every version is always a little different with Die Fledermaus. The conductor in this case, our wonderful conductor, Tomer Zvulun, who is also the artistic director of the Atlanta Opera, has his own little version, and so this has all kinds of little surprises and tricks in it. But the music is all the same authentic Strauss, and as is gorgeous and as enticing and as hypnotic as it ever was. Ward Holmquist, artistic director for the Lyric, is conducting, and he adores this score, and I think you should stay away from it unless you do adore this score, because that kind of enthusiasm is essential, and the kind of playfulness that's needed from the singers and the pit, it's got to be felt. It's not something that's acquired by practice. practice. It's something that's felt instinctively, the kind of flow and give and take with the music. And, it's just such a glorious thing. It's the greatest comic opera that Germany produced after Marriage of Figaro, if you want to call the Mozart's Marriage of Figaro a German comic opera. Which some people would debate that because it was written in Italian, but it's such a glorious piece. And when you think that it was really his first big success on the stage, I mean, Strauss had been composing waltzes for 30 years before he got around to doing stuff on the stage. And his wife, Yeti, had been like, come on, Johann, look what Offenbach's been doing. He even said to you should be composing operettas. And he thought, oh, no, I really don't want to, and I'm worried about success, and my brother is running the orchestra, so I can just write concert waltzes. I don't even have to get out there and conduct the hard grind of, you know, 4 or 5 hours of a dance hall. And but finally, he got enticed into writing for the stage, particularly the Theater an der Wien, which is still standing. And he realized that it could be very exciting. And he attempted two works initially, which were moderately successful. And then the manager of the theater, actually there were two. There was Marie Geistinger, which is interesting. There was a woman who was the part manager. Manager of the theater at the time, and she was also the head soubrette or main singer and comedian at the piece at the theater, and they presented him with this libretto, which was originally based on a French play called Le Réveillon, which meant the Christmas Eve party. And it was a wild sort of farcical piece that had been successful in Paris, making fun of Christmas Eve and making fun of the people and the wealthy people doing silly things. And the producer thought, I don't know what the Viennese are going to go for this. And there's another interesting little fact about the same period. In 1873, there had been a terrible stock market crash. And so Vienna was in a deep depression. And they thought, well, what they probably need is something light and frothy and fun. And they looked this script over and thought, well, it could be fun, but maybe if we take the religious element out of it and make it any day of the year, and then all of a sudden it could be a little looser, a little freer. And so you have a piece that is completely devoid of sentimentality, or there is a touch of sentiment, and a great deal of social humor and comedy, and a farcical structure as well. And it's characters being identified for some other person that they aren't, and, you know, confusions, which all get worked out at the end. But the essence of it, I think, Michael, and I hear I'm babbling on like in constant stream.
It's all very interesting.
The soprano is married to a financier named Gabriel von Eisenstein, and it seems that their marriage is probably not terribly successful. And he's been evading his taxes, so he's supposed to go and spend 8 days in prison. So she has a former lover named Alfred, in our production they actually refer to him as Alfredo, who is an operatic tenor. And he's singing in the garden, and he comes in, and he finds out that the husband's going away, so he wants to seduce her back into his arms, and he does that by singing to her, naturally. And one of his lines is, in German, glücklich ist, wer vergisst, was doch nicht ändern ist, which is almost untranslatable. It essentially means, happy is he who can forget that which can't be done, anything, nothing can be done about it. And I think that relates probably to the financial crisis the city was in. And that's what they were getting at. In our production, it's sung as night and day, light and gay, let us sing our cares away, which is not the same thing as let's forget that which we can't do anything about, which has a little more philosophical edge to it. But that's the tone of the piece. So there's a reason why we escape into champagne, and why people yearn for games, and why people yearn to put on masks and to pretend to be somebody that they're not. And I think that's part of the universal delight in it. And it so intrigued Strauss that he sat down in his villa in Hietzing, and for 42 days, hardly saw anybody, only ate and drank enough, and composed the whole work in 42 days. It was a great explosion of creativity from him. And initially, oddly enough, the work was not too successful when it was produced in 1874 at the Theater an der Wien. Again, it's possible, one, the story is that some of the singers were ill, so they weren't able to do justice to it. Also, that the financial depression was still in place, and people either couldn't afford to come, or they were resentful of the fact that here they could barely afford a coffee, and here were all these people on stage eating and drinking like crazy. So eventually the piece was picked up in Berlin, where it was a huge success, and then the producers, the Theater an der Wien, about 4 months later, revived it in October, and then it took off. And, of course, it's been one of the signature pieces of Vienna. Vienna as much as the Merry Widow since that time. And it's completely identified with this, what is the romanticized, idealized concept of what Vienna is.
Yeah, I like to read what past reviewers have said about a piece. Perhaps you do that too. Robert is an actor as well as, I didn't give him a proper introduction. You've seen him with The Rep. You've seen him with Actors Theater. You've seen him at the opera.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Even the ballet.
Yes.
Even in the ballet.
Not dancing.
Don't let them know that. So quite versatile and quite a scholar as well as you've, you know, as you've absorbed from listening to him talk, you know, he really studies these roles. But I read some of the past reviews, and it even went so far as to call it a romantic comedy, a misinterpretation of roles in a role-playing context. There were several different ways that they talked about the role.
Yeah. It really revived the whole idea of the operetta as an art form. And he wrote several others in his life, and probably the only one that's consistently produced these days is the Gypsy Baron or the Zigeuner Baron. And I don't know of a good English version of that, so it doesn't get done in English very much. But the Die Fledermaus, which means the bat, certainly has been produced in America since 1874. And, you know, it's been part of the Met's repertoire for many years, and there's hardly an opera company that doesn't produce it at some time or other. And the public enjoys it, and it gives an opportunity for the singers. And the singing demands are not minimal. They're quite powerful. You really need a really rich, powerful voice to sing the principal female part, Rosalinda. Then you have to have a delightful leggero, and we certainly do, with a marvelous Anna Christie, who is singing Adele, the maid, and she's so charming and so playful and has a gleaming, sparkling voice. Then you have to have a mezzo-soprano to sing Prince Orlovsky, which is one of those operatic conventions called a pants role. And although occasionally producers have tried to replace the mezzo-soprano with either a countertenor or sometimes a tenor or even a baritone, Strauss really intended, he wanted that mezzo-soprano color in there and the humor of having a woman being a man on stage and what that suggests, you know, the playfulness with that. And we've got Joyce Castle, who is one of the great, 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 great character mezzos in our country right now, and she's also a full-time teacher at KU in the voice department over there, and a glorious colleague, and I'm delighted to say I've worked with her before, and it's such a pleasure for me. I play her servant, which is why I'm going on so much about that. The Eisenstein, the principal male role, is played by a young baritone named Liam Bonner, and he has a marvelous, it's a hard part, because the range is sometimes sung by tenors, it's sometimes sung by baritones with really good tops. Well, Liam has a fantastic top, and he's slender and handsome and playful and can handle all the dialogue and with great good humor. And speaking of handling the humor, Gordon Geetz is our Alfredo, and he's done Alfredo before, and he's played Eisenstein before. He's hilarious. And the role of Alfred is not one that tenors seek out and long to perform, as they would say Rodolfo in La Boheme. But this one has been given the opportunity to sing as many of the highlights from the operatic repertoire for the tenor as possible. And in the third act, he's taken to prison, mistakenly, for Mr. Eisenstein. And while he's sitting up there, he drives the prison jailer crazy by singing excerpts from various kinds of operas. And so Gordon must cover about 12 different operas with little excerpts, almost all of them landing on a high note. And I just sit there going, how do you do that? And then he's hilariously funny as well. So it's a huge joy to have someone like that singing the role of Alfred. Let's see, we have, oh yes, our Kelly Caduce is singing Rosalinda, and she's having a terrific career all over America. It's a wonderful voice. She's a major butterfly across the country, and she's also a wonderfully gifted comedienne. And Ward Holmquist was saying to me the other day, she's one of the freest physical performers, singers I've ever met. He said most Rosalindas are careful to, you know, they want to be super careful how they manage because the vocal demands are pretty great. And she just flings herself into all the physical comedy all over the place, which gets quite physical, and it's delightful. Let's say we have Paul LaRosa as Dr. Falke, which is sort of the lead baritone role, and he's the bat of our story. People always say, well, so what's the bat got to do with all this? And it's confused people over the years. There was a production of this back in the 30s in which the title was renamed Rosalinda. The French have always called it La Tzigane, the gypsy woman. It really has to do with the baritone getting revenge for having been dumped when he was drunk out in the street, dressed as a bat after a costume ball by Eisenstein, and he spins the plot that sets the whole story in motion, so it's essentially the revenge of the bat. Although we never see any of this bat business, but that's why it's called Die Fledermaus. Let's see, with John Stevens, head of the voice department at KU, and with a long, long, rich, wonderful career behind him as bass baritone, sung many, 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 many times with the Kansas City Lyric Opera. And he's doing Frank, who is the governor of the jail, a wonderful comic part. He has a delicious moment in the third act. Strauss wrote what's called a melodrame or melodrama in which there's no dialogue, and this worried the producer, Marie Geistinger, and she went to Strauss and she said, I don't know if this is going to work because there's no one singing and no one saying anything and there's just this music and him up there, and Strauss was a little hesitant and thought, well, maybe she's right. And the librettist, a man named Hoffner, came up and said, no, this is extraordinary what you've written. And so it's a marvelous little moment where someone who's deeply hungover, in this case Frank, arrives at his office and is still half in his cups and imagining the party that he had just been in the second act. Fragments of the waltz that he had danced to come through his mind, images of the beautiful women that he flirted with, the feeling of being very, very ill, the need for coffee, rest, read the newspaper, and finally he falls asleep on stage. And our director has added a wonderful little touch. His fantasy women begin to appear around him, which I've never seen done before. And we do that because we have four wonderful ballet dancers, actually five, who appear also in the second act and bring great flavor and gusto. And their dances have all been choreographed by Devin Charney, who is the new artistic director for the Kansas City Ballet. And so that's another wonderful collaboration that's occurring and a great gift for this production. Let's see, did I cover everybody here?
Well, I just like to ask about the crossover between the ballet and the opera on mm-hmm. this occasion. That gives the public that are familiar with both. Some people are season ticket holders for both.
Right,
so,
exactly.
So they would especially get a kick out of seeing this crossover.
Yeah.
People like crossovers.
Oh, they do. And the party in the second act offers you such an opportunity for a wide range of divertissement. Sometimes, particularly on New Year's Eve performances, you have guest artists who will appear as guests of Prince Orlovsky. And there's a famous recording by von Karajan, and all the famous singers of Decca at that time for producing that recording appear as artists and sing an aria or a song. And in this case, we don't have any, but we do have a ballet. They dance to the Thunder and Lightning or Donner und Blitzen polka. And that's great fun and splash and flair. And
the Donner and Blitzen polka. Yeah, now, you know what that makes me think of?
Was? Christmas?
Yes. How interesting. We're speaking with Robert Gibby Brand. He, you've seen him all over. Actually, didn't you tell me once you started with opera?
Yes,
and then
yes.
Got into acting after opera?
Right. In fact, my first role here in Kansas City was singing Phineas Fogg in the lyrics production of Sweeney Todd way back in 1985. So, yes, I owe a great debt to the Lyric Opera, and I've always been so thrilled to have a chance to be with them.
He mentioned earlier he doesn't sing in this, but he does sing. I've heard him sing on occasions before.
So, but this time I'm silent, or as much as possible. I do say a few words, but I'm busy, and that's the fun with this piece. And of course, your singers all have to be able to handle dialogue, too, and ours do, and they're very playful, and it's crisp, it's fun, it's like a good bottle of champagne, which is what it should be. So, I think people are going to absolutely love it. I'm surprised that people, I think it's because the title is Die Fledermaus. In the operatic world, everybody knows that title, but people who aren't necessarily au courant with opera go, the what? And so then you have to say, well, it means the bat. And they say, a bat? And so then you have to start, well, actually, it's a great comedy and Viennese operetta, and encourage people to come because it's such a wonderful evening and there's nothing heavy about it. It's very, very broad. broad comedy and, as I say, some of the greatest operetta music ever composed, bar none. There's just no question about it.
Sure. They will ask me, aren't most operas tragedies?
Right.
Doesn't someone always die in the
end? Yeah. I mean, when you think all the plots are based on whopping great melodramas. But in this case, it's based on a French farce.
Yeah. I have to ask about the costuming. It must be extensive.
It is. This is set in the correct period. And I think the package is from Washington Opera, but I might be wrong on that. But Mary Traylor has been coordinating, as usual, all these costumes, and they are glorious. And you have women in beautiful, full 1870s gowns with corseting and beautiful piled wigs and jewelry, and all the men. And we have not just in tux and tails, but we have a lot of the guests at Orlovsky's party are sporting what would be sort of Slavic uniforms. And so you have various colors and textures and coats and fur, all kinds of wonderful color and texture elements that are brought into it. So it's a very colorful and just a delight to watch. You get swirling effects. And, of course, all the dancing and movement. And so you have all this fabric going in circles. You know, walzen, to waltz, means to rotate or to move in circles. And so when you have lots of gorgeous fabric swirling, that works well, too.
Yeah, it helps, I would imagine. Get into the character.
That's right.
Feel the period. Feel that you're actually in that year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It truly does. And, of course, it's an artifice. You know, the Vienna wasn't just like that, and you have to remind yourself of the difference between play and reality. It's not a slice of life. But at the time it was written, it was considered relatively realistic because it was about a bourgeois family. And these are not aristocrats, and nor gods and goddesses, nor anything of the sort. And it's a middle-class family going through a bad marriage patch, if you want to think about it that way.
Sure.
And, but then it's all done in three-quarter time. And, you know, happy is he who can forget the problems that cannot be fixed.
That's right. as is the case in De Fledermaus, also known as The Bat, that didn't come out in my research, Johann Strauss. Robert Gibby Brand is with us. It opens on Saturday, April the 26th at 7:30 p.m. Performances continue on Wednesday, the 30th of April at 7:30 p.m. Performances then resume on Friday, May the 2nd at 7:30, and it culminates on Sunday afternoon, the 4th of May, with a 2 o'clock p.m. performance at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. The opera singers must love to get on that big stage. I assume it's at the Muriel Kauffman side of the theater.
Yes, it is.
That's the big side. And singers in the past have told me, don't want to be mic'd, no need to be mic'd.
No, we're not being mic'd.
Even in a big room like that.
So hopefully there won't be any difficulty. There's very little speaking over the orchestra. Strauss is pretty careful to separate dialogue from the singing. And the sound pops out very nicely out there. And I'm just thinking about Anna Case, who's playing the Adele. And her first entrance is hilarious. She comes in on a very, very high note, cascading down. And then she goes into a little song about, you know, the letter that she's just received. And it's very, very humorous, the way that is all set up. And
I would think that would be very hard to do, to start up like that and go down.
And come down. Thing. Yeah, well, you know, in some ways it's like a vocalese. And then she's sort of talking on pitch. You know, I have a letter from my sister who is a dancer at the ballet. She's invited me to, you know, a party and so forth and so on. And then she goes off on her fireworks later. So, Anna handles that very, very well because, you know, when Strauss needs to get the information across, it's all pretty nicely comfortable middle voice, and then when he lets the singer show off, and then we go rocketing up 2 octaves.
Yeah. Well, I hope you've enjoyed, Robert, giving you a little inside baseball, as it were, on the performances of De Fledermaus by Johann Strauss. It will be open on Saturday, May the 26th, at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. The number to call for more information is 816-471-7344 or online at kcopera.org. You can click your way through. You can make your arrangements online. The Kauffman Center, Boy, if you don't know, it actually does have an address. They just say, go to the Kauffman Center. 1601 Broadway is the actual physical address of the Kauffman Center. I was surprised Union Station and the Liberty Memorial actually have addresses as well. And you never see it in the literature.
No. Do we have time for a play out, Michael?
Oh, sure.
Cut
number four.
I brought along the overture to Die Fledermaus, Massa, and this is the great Carlos Kleiber conducting the Vienna Philharmonic back in 1989.
A little taste of Die Fledermaus. Our thanks to... I keep on wanting to say Bob. So.
Please do say Bob. I think we've known each other long enough to use that.
Well, thank you for bringing the music and providing the background, the commentary. I always find that so useful. I enjoy it.
Good.
I think the audience does.
I hope so.
Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
As we hear Die Fledermaus playing in the background a little bit. The Lyric Opera, beginning on April the 26th, will be presenting Die Fledermaus, a part of the Lyric Opera presentation, the 26th, the 30th, then into May the 2nd and the 4th at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. The number to call, once again, for more information, 816-471-7344, or online at kcopera.org. You almost hate to fade down on it, but if you want to hear more of it, you have to go. That's just the way it is. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thanks, Michael.
Always so informative. And I challenge anyone to say this was not informative.
I hope it was entertaining.
Oh, it certainly was. The Jazz Insider is next. Great jazz. Great commentary about the jazz. Maybe he can get you to stay over. You probably know a great deal about that as well. Jazz from 1 to 3. The blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's Community Radio.